We're at the Byron Bay Writers Festival and we're talking this afternoon with Eric Jensen, the author of Acute Misfortune, The Life and Times of Adam Cullen. Hello there, Eric, and welcome to Arts Canvas.
Hi, nice to be here.
Now, of course, I think you have to actually get the award as possibly the most misled biographer in history, given the way you started out on your project with Adam.
Yeah, the project began as a lie and ended up as an interrogation of a great number of lies. But I'd written a profile of Adam for the Sydney Morning Herald, and he called to say he had a contract with Thames and Hudson, the publishing company, and wanted me to come and stay in his spare room and write his biography. And it was at least a year before I realised that there was no contract and that I was there under false pretences. But by that stage, I had become so intrigued by the fantasy that Adam was living in that I wanted to try to explain it.
You were very young when this started, weren't you?
Yeah, I was 19 when I first started work on the book. And I don't think I'd be able to write the book now. So much of those early interviews were, I suppose, padded by my naivety. I don't think I wrote a naive book, but had I been any more grown up, I wouldn't have necessarily stayed around to finish the interviews in the first instance.
Still, it's a credit to you that when you slowly realised that perhaps you'd been taken in by a pathological liar, you decided to stick it out because you sensed a story, didn't you?
Well, by that stage, I had become so interested in the character Adam was playing that it would have been foolish to leave, I think. And also, I'm reasonably stubborn, and I had a year's worth of shorthand in my notebooks and thought that, you know, I wouldn't want to waste that.
Now, you said the character that Adam was playing, which is kind of a clue, isn't it? Because do you really think that you ever saw the real Adam Cullen, or was he always just playing what he thought Adam Cullen should be?
By the end of his life, Adam was unable to disentangle his true self from the character that he'd spent so long playing. I think we did some genuinely honest interviews together, and I think the person that I show in the book is the true Adam. I believe that. I don't think he had a clear view as we were doing those interviews of who the true Adam was. He was, in some respects, finding himself in our conversations. But there was an urgency of truth towards the end of his life. And I realised that I was there as his confessor in some respects, that he wanted, with great hurry, to get down some truth about himself because he realised that what he would otherwise leave behind was a fabrication.
Do you feel you began to move from a position of fascination, admiration, to perhaps a position of pitying him, in that he became a rather tragic figure in the end?
I never pitied Adam. He'd made so many choices about how he wished to live, and I decided very early on that I wasn't going to judge any of those choices. I wasn't going to write a moralising book about how terrible it is to be ruined by addiction and to waste talent and so on. And so in not judging him, I also refused to pity him. But I did feel a great fondness for Adam, and that fondness wasn't pity, but it was tempered always by the exhaustion of his company.
Exhaustion because he was a very full-on personality, he was very hyper?
There was that, and there was also the fact that it is exhausting to be lied to constantly. It is exhausting to find yourself caught in someone else's provocations. He did a number of things while we were working on the book to sort of, I suppose, test my mettle or see how stupidly committed I might have been to the book. And so at one point he shot me in the leg, and at another point he threw me off a motorcycle. And the kind of the culmination of those various abuses is exhausting for anyone.
Well, I'm surprised you actually survived them. Have you got a sort of wound on your leg there at all from where he shot you?
There's unfortunately, you know, the one drawback from being shot in this instance is that it didn't leave any kind of glamorous scarring. It was birdshot, and so the very kind of pathetic little bullets that I had to work out of my thigh.
Yeah, well, I still think it might have hurt. Now, how much do you think that Adam was also a victim of the media mythology that was built around him and his work?
I don't think Adam ever allowed himself to be a victim, but what interested me about Adam in the first instance was his careful and very successful manipulation of the media. He was an artist capable of forcing himself onto front pages, and he was capable in interviews of convincing people that he was someone that in many respects he wasn't. And I sense that he lived the life he did to maintain the character that he was playing and to maintain the myths that he had spread about himself in the press. But I don't think the press had any role in his death. I don't think the press or the art world were terribly feeling about the fact that this was a man who was dying, but nor were they necessarily responsible.
Do you think that posterity will change its opinion on Adam Cullen's work in terms of how long it's going to remain popular? Because for some time he was very much riding that crest of that wave of being the golden boy of art. He'd won a number of awards. His work was collecting very high prices. Do you think that's going to sustain?
Yeah, the very good of Adam's work will sustain because the very best of his paintings and of his sculpture are truly wonderful. There is also some very uneven and some very bad work. The fact of an artist's death and the fact of an artist's legacy is that the bad work disappears over time and it is only the good work that is remembered. And so if anything, I think Adam's reputation will be burnished by the fact that the substandard pictures he was making simply for the sake of really feeding an addiction towards the end will be forgotten in his legacy.
How did you feel when you finally learned of his death?
I was surprisingly grieved. I had become totally exhausted by him at that stage. I'd moved cities. I'd stopped taking his phone calls. He was ringing 3 or 4 times a day with increasingly kind of bizarre demands and fantasies. And I had known the whole time that he was dying. And the terms of our very first interview were him telling me that he was dying. And that his death was one of the reasons he wanted me to work on this book, or his imminent death, I should say. And yet, when he finally died, despite all that inevitability, but despite that sort of shadow having hung over our entire 4 years of conversations, I found myself weeping, and I found myself genuinely sad. And it was at that point that I actually sort of dragged together the creative notebooks I had and realised I needed to write the book because I had otherwise, I think, got close to giving up on it.
Having sort of been through this process with one person, do you think you'd actually have more of an awareness now of being manipulated in a similar way by a subject?
Absolutely. There's as I said, I think earlier, there's no way I could have written this book if I were not 19 and, carrying around a carapace of naivety that allowed myself to subject myself to situations I wouldn't now find acceptable. But equally, Adam was an artist whose work, his best work, existed on this precipice between childhood naivety and innocence and the evil and malevolence of adulthood. It was a life he led. He never properly grew up and he never properly understood himself. And so he was caught also on that precipice. I happily was on that precipice when I started the project and I grew up writing the project. And so when I actually finished the book, I had attained some kind of maturity that I think had eluded Adam and certainly was not present in me when I had started. And it let me still, despite that naivety, have for a brief time existed in his world and captured the kind of tension that was his life.
It seems it was almost a fated combination of people, because if you'd been any older or any different, you wouldn't have done this, and he possibly wouldn't have been in a condition to talk to anybody later on as well. So it was actually an extraordinary opportunity to start your career, wasn't it?
It was. I'm very fortunate, despite all the the abuse and things that I found difficult. I'm fortunate that Adam decided, for reasons still elusive to me, that I should, this kind of 19-year-old journalist who didn't necessarily have anything to recommend him, should be the person to write his biography.
Thanks for talking to us, Eric.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks very much.